Thank you for standing by, and welcome to the G8 Education Limited conference call. All participants are in a listen-only mode. There will be a presentation followed by a question-and-answer session. If you wish to ask a question, you will need to press the star key followed by the number one on your telephone keypad. I would now like to hand the conference over to Mr. Gary Carroll, CEO. Please go ahead.
Thank you, and good morning, everyone, and thanks for joining the trading update call for G8 Education. My name's Gary Carroll, and I'm the CEO and Managing Director of G8 Education Limited. I'm joined on the call today by the Group CFO, Sharyn Williams. We'll walk through the investor presentation that was posted on the ASX earlier this morning, and then we'll provide time for any questions. Slide four of the presentation pack sets out the summary of the achievements for the year to date, both from an operational and a strategic perspective, as well as providing a high-level outlook for 2021. Starting with operations, it's been pleasing to see occupancy continue the recovery that was highlighted in our half-year results presentation in August, with like-for-like occupancy currently at  75.5%. The group has continued to manage costs well, which, when combined with continued government support, has allowed us to increase investment in key areas such as in-center resources and repairs and maintenance in the fourth quarter. Our unaltered underlying EBIT as at the end of November was $98 million, including current year wage costs relating to the employee payment remediation program. From a strategic perspective, the group has made good progress in its portfolio optimization activities, with the divestment program for our 52 impaired centers being on track and the sale of the Singapore business being completed. Our re-engineered improvement program, in which all activities except for major asset refurbishments were continued despite the challenging COVID-19 related environment, has progressed in line with expectations, with approximately 100 centers being covered by the program in 2020. As flagged in August, G8 undertook a comprehensive, proactive review of its award and legislative requirements as part of the implementation of its new rostering system. This review identified inadvertent award non-compliance, and a remediation program has commenced, with total one-off pre-tax costs estimated to be between $50 to $80 million. And I'll talk more about this remediation program shortly. Looking ahead to 2021, the group will continue to focus on three main areas. Firstly, the optimisation of our portfolio involving the divestment of our previously impaired centres. Secondly, the continuation of our improvement program. And lastly, the measured rollout of new greenfield centres using our revised investment model. While we do expect general economic conditions to be impacted by COVID-related events in 2021, the progress to date in our key focus areas gives us the confidence to increase the pace in these areas, particularly the improvement program. The costs of the program will be managed to ensure they are funded by the benefits of the overall strategic program. Slide six unpacks the trading result in more detail. The year-to-date underlying EBIT result has been driven by two factors. Firstly, good operational delivery, as well as the benefits of government support. I'll talk more about occupancy and wages in more detail shortly. I wanted to highlight two impacts in relation to the 2020 profit result. Firstly, the group did not implement a fee increase in 2020 as stipulated by the government subsidy arrangements. We've also chosen to increase our cost investment in quarter four by around $8.5 million, covering R&M and in-center resources. These investments are designed to continue G8's improvement in quality, which will have positive benefits in future years. Capital expenditure for 2020 is expected to be around $31 million, in line with previous guidance, while the group's net debt has been reduced such that we are in a broadly cash-neutral position. We continue to enjoy strong support from our lenders, with amendments to bank covenants in place until December 21, and the refinance process being on track to be completed in early 2021. Slide seven shows the group's 2020 occupancy performance in detail. It's pleasing to see the group narrowing the occupancy gap by around 5.5 percentage points since the April low, with the current gap to last year at approximately 4.5%. The growth has been reasonably even across the states, with the exception of Victoria, which took longer to ramp up due to longer lockdown periods, and the ACT, where the group has experienced higher than normal turnover of centre managers. The impact of the lockdowns in Victoria is evident on slide 8, which shows the attendance trends for the year. Importantly, all states are now demonstrating a normal differential between occupancy, as represented by bookings, and attendances. Slide 9 outlines the group's performance in relation to wage hours per booking in 2020. On an overall basis, G8 delivered wage efficiencies in line with its targets for the year. A straight year-on-year comparison is very challenging due to the very different occupancy levels in 2019 and 2020. To highlight the improvement in wage efficiency in 2020, we have marked the wage hour per booking result at the same occupancy level, in this case 74%. The improvement in wage efficiency in 2020 at the same occupancy level is clear, with this result being achieved as a result of utilising the technology platform that forms part of G8's new rostering system. Important to note, these relative efficiency improvements are not impacted by the employee payment remediation program. The other key point in this slide is that wage efficiency is absolutely impacted by occupancy. This is clearly reflected in November 2020, where the drop in wage efficiency was driven by the 5 percentage point difference in occupancy. I'll now provide further details on the remediation program that is underway to address award and legislative compliance issues. Let me first start by saying that our team members are critically important to providing the best learning foundations for our children and support for our families, and the commitment of our people, particularly during the challenges we have faced this year, is our key to success. As mentioned at the start of the presentation and outlined in slide 10, a proactive review of award and legislative requirements was undertaken as part of our new rostering system implementation. That review identified inadvertent non-compliance issues covering the past 6.5 year period. These issues primarily relate to payment for overtime, minimum engagement periods, and agreed hours of work and allowances. In many cases, the issues arose due to insufficient documentation of agreed hours. G8 has voluntarily self-reported to and is engaging with the Fair Work Ombudsman in relation to these issues. The total one-off remediation cost of these issues is presently estimated to be $50 to $80 million on a pre-tax basis. This includes estimated direct wage costs of approximately $38 to $60 million, wage on costs, interest, and remediation program costs. It's worth noting that the direct wage cost impact represents between 1.5% and 2% of the total wage cost over that 6.5 year period. And for those wanting to understand the impact of the program on CY20 EBIT, the year-to-date results includes a provision of approximately $12 million in relation to this program. Now, these estimates are based on preliminary analysis and assumptions, and these costs net of tax will be funded from existing cash reserves. A remediation program is underway, and the group is committed to ensuring that all team members are paid correctly moving forward. The remediation program is expected to be completed by 31 July 2021. A new rostering system, which is designed to automate certain award compliance and improve visibility, is scheduled to be fully implemented across G8's network by the end of half one, CY21. In the interim, the group will be utilising the centralised processes designed as part of the new HRS system to mitigate the impact of these issues. Accordingly, G8 does not expect any material impact to wage costs in future years as a result of these issues. Clearly, the group deeply regrets that these pay issues have occurred, and we apologise unreservedly to all affected team members. Turning to slide 12, which sets out the group's near-term strategic priorities. Firstly, rollout of the new rostering system is on track, with the end-to-end process being deployed for the first pilot group of centres, with a larger pilot currently underway. Full rollout across the remaining network will commence in early 2021. Secondly, it's pleasing to see the 2019 pilot centres, now improvement program, performing in line with expectations in terms of occupancy and other key metrics. Around 100 centres will be completed in 2020 as part of the program, with planning being finalised for the 2021 cohort. From a network optimisation perspective, active negotiations are underway to exit 27 previously impaired centres in line with schedule. We outlined our revised approach to greenfield acquisitions in the half-year update in August, with significantly reduced capital outlays per centre, driving higher returns on capital. The group is progressing a number of negotiations using this new model with good acceptance from developers. Turning to our outlook on page 13, the group expects 2021 to be a recovery year as COVID-19 continues to impact, particularly on occupancy, either directly through movement restrictions or indirectly through economic impacts such as higher unemployment. Lower occupancy levels in a regulated wage environment impact wage efficiency. This, compounded by the absence of a CY20 fee increase, increases wages as a percentage of revenue. Near-term strategic priorities in CY21 remain on executing the divestment of previously impaired centres, the improvement program, and network growth. The improvement program is expected to gain momentum in CY21 based on positive results to date and the medium-term earnings potential of this program. The costs of the increased activity will be managed to ensure they are funded by benefits of the strategic programs. Approximately 10 new greenfield centres are expected in CY21 for a capital outlay of circa $4 million. Startup trading losses in CY21 are expected to be around $4 million based on current centre opening dates, with strong returns over the medium term as the centres mature. CapEx deferred from CY20 of $10 million will be released in 2021, taking the total to at least $50 million, with further incremental spend based on return hurdles. That concludes the formal part of the presentation. I'll now open the floor to any questions.
Thank you. If you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. If you wish to cancel your request, please press star 2. If you're on a speakerphone, please pick up the handset to ask your question. Your first question comes from Tim Plum with UBS. Please go ahead.
Hi, Gary. A couple of questions from me, but I might just ask two and then I'll jump back in the queue again. Just in relation to the wage costs, you know, obviously it's dependent on occupancy, but how should we be thinking about labour costs as a percentage of revenue going forward next year in broad terms?
Yeah, so there's two factors to take into account, Tim. One is no fee increase in 2020, but there were wage increases. So if you model 2 years of wage increases but only 1 year of fee increase, you'll see some margin compression off the back of that. And I think the percentages are quite straightforward for you. The second is the impact on wage efficiency, which we tried to provide some guidance on slide 9. That will have an impact. Clearly won't be quantifying it, but we're hopeful that people will take both factors into account when they're coming up with an estimate of wages, but wages will go up as a percentage of revenue.
Yep. And then just in terms of those greenfields, so looks like $400,000 loss in year one. How should we think about the earnings profile or the expected earnings profile of those new centres over the next couple of years?
So the broad operating metrics of those centres are no different to the balance of our portfolio, in that an 80-place centre, depending on the fees, should be generating EBIT north of $300,000 per centre on an ongoing basis.
Got it.
So that gives you a good sense of the return potential of that kind of portfolio.
And over what period would you expect to see that?
So our ramp-up period has varied across our portfolio. What we have done is model the impact of the centres, locations and other characteristics that we're currently negotiating at. We benchmarked it against similar centres that form part of our previous greenfield pipeline. And there you'd say the ramp-up period is between 12 and 18 months to get to that maturity.
Great. Okay, thanks, guys. I'll jump back in the queue.
Thank you. The next question comes from John Hind with Wilsons. Please go ahead.
Good morning, Gary and Sharon. Thanks for taking my question. Just following on from Tim's questions around the greenfield, all 10, just confirming, you're expecting all 10 centres to open in 21. How should we think about this profile going forward? It looks like this is back on the agenda for you. And I guess, what gives you the confidence this time around about the centres and their earnings profile and the risks to supply, given, you know, what investors were dealing with in the last sort of 3 to 4 years with the previous portfolio?
Yep, so two key changes for me, John. One, we have changed a number of key members of our team in our property development space, and I'm certainly very excited about the capability that our new people have brought to that team. The increased rigor around assessment of future supply demand and ensuring that we're actually in locations that we're extremely pleased with versus a portfolio that was more on an inherited basis previously. And the second element is we're more proactive in our design of the centre itself, so we're able to incorporate the elements that we want to see as opposed to inheriting a design from developers. That also enables us to have much greater control over the timing of opening as opposed to our previous arrangement. So you'd really say it's been pretty much completely re-engineered in terms of site selection, site design, construction management, and economic modelling of supply demand, and we're very strict on ensuring that we're going into areas where we feel that there's an attractive supply demand balance. And as you would have noted in August when we did our impairment review, that wasn't evident in our previous greenfield portfolio in all centres.
Yeah, thank you. So just following on from that, the centres, will you be dealing with an incubator partner, or is this is all on balance sheet? And I guess have any how are the occupancy or inquiry levels looking as you start bringing these guys, well, sorry, centres out of the ground?
Yeah, so a couple of points to note there. One, it's not an incubator in the sense that maybe others in the market have, where they pick it up at a certain occupancy level. We will be inheriting these centres at open and building the occupancy from scratch. The capital outlay then reflects that, John. So we're essentially paying for the fit-out of the in-centre resources, maybe a small contribution to other fit-outs. So you're talking about a $400,000 capital outlay versus a $3 million in an incubator-type arrangement. To take account of that we need to build ramp-up occupancy. The actual inquiries process hasn't really occurred because a number of these centres, the majority will be opening in the second half of the year in 2021, and that's a function of when we've started rolling out the new model and the construction profile that comes with that.
That's great. Just one more from me before I jump in the queue. The asset sales, I think there was 52 originally flagged when you took the impairments. They were losing about $14 million of EBIT. How progressed are, when can we get, I guess, detail on completion of sale for this, I think it's 25 centres or 27 centres, and how far away are the rest, please? And also, how are you selling centres in the current environment? Are there any additional hurdles you need to jump over?
Yeah, so What we intend to do, John, is keep the market updated as we progress through and complete negotiations, because the reality is that, you know, they're not 5-minute negotiations, so trying to come up with a forecast in terms of timeline is pretty difficult for us. It's certainly been happy with the progress made, but it's very difficult, as I'm sure you can appreciate, to predict and kind of slot into quarter by quarter, this is what we're going to expect. We're pursuing a number of options in terms of how we exit those centres. For the nearer term lease expiries, it may be a matter of getting to a lease surrender amount that's amenable to both parties, and we exit the centre that way. For other centres where it's more long-term lease, it's a sales process. We have engaged a couple of partners to assist with the sale process for those longer-term leases. That process has just commenced, so it's quite difficult at this point to come up with any timing. The focus over the last 3 months has been on the exits from a surrender point of view, and we've made some pretty good ground. I expect us to provide a more fulsome update in February as we progress through.
Thanks. Just from my knowledge, so at least surrender is so the 20-odd or 25-odd centres that you've earmarked today, they are all, I mean, are they essentially on holdover? Is that what it means already?
No, none of them had were a holdover. They all had a lease that had some period to run. The amount of the period varied from, you know, 12 months up to very long period. So none of them run holdover, where we were able to obviously just give 1 month's notice and hand back the keys. That wasn't the case for any of them.
Okay, and so it sounds like you've sort of, as you exit, then you'll be exiting for a small loss with this portfolio and the smaller portfolio.
So our focus, if we're looking to surrender the lease, is to come up with an exit cost that we think is reasonable based on the lease time to expiry, at the amount of the rent and the losses that we're incurring. And that's, as you can imagine, a balancing exercise. And the engagement level varies by landlord.
Yep. Thanks very much, Gary.
Thank you. The next question comes from Gareth James with Morningstar. Please go ahead.
Oh, hi, guys. Just keen to get your thoughts on the outlook for demand and supply, or more for supply. Just looking at the ASIQA data, seems to imply that supply is still pretty strong, and I'm talking in terms of number of places being added. I've got it currently running at about 4.7% per year. So, what are your thoughts on that going forward and potential impacts on G8?
Yeah, thanks, Gareth. Good question. And we set out in our investor prezo in the appendix an overview of the supply-demand dynamics. So, quarter two this year, as you'd expect, was a low point given the COVID environment, but it did rebound. And full year basis, we're seeing supply growing at about the same as historical levels. So certainly agree with your initial assessment that supply growth hasn't materially abated. And our initial forecast is it won't abate over the coming period in any significant way. Even though we do think occupancy off the back of employment conditions will be at a lower level. The pleasing thing from our perspective is the impact on our exact network has been substantially reduced. Lots fewer centres opening within a couple of kilometres of a G8 centre. So specific impact to G8's been okay, actually been more positive over the last 12 months. What that will look like moving forward is anyone's guess, which is actually the impetus behind us accelerating our improvement program. Our evidence still suggests that if we improve our quality and we have a stable, engaged team, that is a really good defence against supply coming on board. So we are looking to up the pace on an improvement program to de-risk any supply-related risks.
Okay, thanks. And just to, if I could clarify something, you talked about a $12 million provision in 2020, I think it was you were talking about relating to the remediation. So just to clarify, so does that mean that the total figure that you've quoted is the rest is going to fall in 2021?
No, so the that's a great question. Thank you. So the remainder of the figure falls into prior years. And there'll be two steps here, and Sharon will no doubt correct me, but the amount relating to 2019 will flow through when we do our year-end accounts in terms of a restated 2019 number. The amounts relating to prior periods before 2019, because this goes back to July 2014 in terms of the review period, they will flow through in terms of an adjustment to opening retained earnings.
Sure, and just one final one for me. So just on the 27 centres that I think you were talking about are going to be sold, I was just wondering, with the EBIT, underlying EBIT figure that you've given, I guess that excludes losses from those centres?
I wish, but no. No, so we haven't. The underlying EBIT includes the $12 million provision for employee payments, but it has all of our centres in it. They will only come out when they exit the network.
Ah, right. So why was the $12 million provision included in underlying EBIT?
Because it's wage cost.
Ah, okay.
So it's relating to the costs of back payments relating to wages under the remediation program. And it is the estimate based off the review work that we have done to date. The final amount will clearly be confirmed as we work our way through the remediation program.
Sure. Okay, thanks, guys.
Thank you. The next question comes from Aaron Muller with Canaccord. Please go ahead.
G'day, Gary. Hi, Sharon. Look, just in terms of the remediation program, could you just give us a bit more colour about, you know, the issues around insufficient documentation?
Yeah, so I'm sure, as you can appreciate, Aaron, we have quite a complex operating environment where we've got regulated ratios on a per-room basis across 470-odd centres with daily movements in attendance levels and team member levels. And, you know, our team adjust on a daily basis to ensure we remain within ratio. And with the mix of workers that we have, full-time, part-time and casual, under the existing award arrangements, any changes to those people's hours, particularly relating to part-time, need to be documented. So we ask someone to do less hours than is under their contract to meet the demand, et cetera, or more hours, then those need to be documented. And our review has highlighted that in a number of cases that documentation is not immediately evident. We now need to commence a more detailed centre-by-centre team member analysis to see if that documentation is in fact in place. If it is in place, then that's one set of actions. If it's not in place, then we clearly need to make a payment to that employee relating to that. I think the overarching root cause is around scale and complexity in a regulated environment with moving parts that occur on a daily basis.
Yeah, okay. And the range that you've provided and the $12 million for this year, and how confident are you that that won't change?
Mate, it's a preliminary estimate based off, you know, a diagnostic review, which has been a very detailed diagnostic review, but I can't say with any certainty at this point in time until we get into record by record, team member by team member, which
sure.
We've got a reasonable basis for the estimation, but we now need to go and complete the work.
Yeah, okay. And look, just on the network growth strategy going forward, should we assume it's going to be skewed towards greenfields? And, is this the main area you'll be looking to deploy capital?
I think the answer wouldn't have changed from the last couple of years, Aaron, in that will balance all the elements of our strategic program, improvement program, divestments, and sensible network growth, and we're agnostic between brownfield and greenfield. There's pluses and minuses to both. Brownfield, you get the opportunity to get a existing earning stream, and providing all the other metrics and key factors that we look for in that centre stack up, you know, supply, demand, quality of team, quality, then we would pursue that. Just so happens that to date, there have been a very few, really none, attractive brownfield opportunities for us to assess.
Yeah, okay. And just going back to speaking up a question by Tim Plum, just on the wage costs, your wage to sales ratio going up next year, are you assuming that the divested centres are still in the business?
Yeah, we have not made any firm assumptions about the timing of the exited centres because they're always subject to negotiations. So we haven't.
Sure.
Okay,
great. Thank you.
Thank you. Once again, if you wish to ask a question, please press star 1. The next question comes from Tim Plum with UBS. Please go ahead.
Hi guys, just a couple of follow-up questions from me, if that's all right. Gary, can you maybe talk about the pipeline of inquiries for next year? How's that looking relative to this time last year, and how do you feel that places the business heading into calendar year 21?
So far, we're ahead of last year in terms of our lead pipeline, Tim, so inquiries, at tours, et cetera. We're tracking ahead of last year. So we're certainly pleased with where we're sitting, but the overall position will only be fully ascertained. The key January-February period is still an important period for us. As you know, because you've been covering the sector for a long time, really splits into two periods. People that secure early, certainly volume's been pretty good. And then there is quite a significant volume that comes through at the very start of the year, in January and into early February. And the lead times on those are compressed, but they also contribute a fair amount to our sort of starting position in February. So I can't talk to how that's looking at this point. Certainly progress to date's been pretty good.
Got it. And I know you guys put it, I think it was on slide 8. Could you give us a sense, what are the actual numbers? So 75.5, I think, was inclusive of Victoria. If you looked at all other states excluding Victoria, what was that number, and what was that number down relative to last year?
Yeah, so I'll probably frame it in terms of how we're tracking against last year. So you'd say states like Queensland and WA are reasonably equivalent. New South Wales, a touch behind, but pretty solid. Victoria is still ramping up. It's still got a little bit of a gap on last year. And ACT is actually our worst performing centre, and that's actually a G8 issue around centre manager turnover. It's only 9 centres as well in terms of our overall network. So you'd say if you exclude Victoria, people have absolutely closed the gap, although we are still slightly behind last year. And Victoria's catching up, but it's a little way behind the rest at this point still.
Great. And just one last one. Those 27 underperforming centres, I mean, $14 million is across the whole portfolio of 52 or whatever it is, and I know that there's some larger, bigger loss-making greenfields included within that portfolio. How do we think about the EBIT loss of the 27 that you're currently looking to exit out of that 14?
Yeah, I can't really give you a number on that, Tim, because it does vary. And also their results flowing through into next year will be clearly subject to how they start the year from an occupancy perspective. So it would be a real guess at this point in time. You know, it's clearly can't do an arithmetic average and say it's about half. The best thing we can do for people is to give you an update as we go, and we can quantify the impact as we're rolling along.
Got it. Okay, I might try and squeeze one last one, if that's all right. $98 million of EBIT includes 12 million provisions, so that's 110 compared to what we thought it was before we knew about that issue. On my numbers, that compares to about 70 mil of adjusted consensus for pre-AASB. So a pretty big beat, and that's November year to date. How do we think about a typical December EBIT contribution for this sort of business?
Well, in a trading update, we wanted to focus on where we're tracking year to date. We weren't going to provide any guidance as to how December looks. We are still, in our view, in quite a volatile operating environment. And if things happen, as we've seen even in South Australia reasonably recently, that can knock things around. So we're not providing guidance as to how December looks. We're clearly happy with what we've done November year to date, and the business is performing well in all the fundamentals. But we're just not going to be providing a number at this point.
Got it. Great. Thanks, guys.
Thank you. The next question comes from James Bales with Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead.
Thanks, guys. Just for clarity, should we be including the 12 million provision in the underlying cost base that we extrapolate going forward, or the new systems, does that go away?
Certainly our intent, James, is that the new systems will mitigate the impact of the results of the review. So we're not anticipating any material increase in future wage costs.
Okay, got it. Thanks.
Thank you. There are no further questions at this time. I'll now hand back to Mr. Carroll for closing remarks.
Well, thanks everyone for your time today. No doubt we'll be catching up with a large proportion of you in the next day or two. And thanks once again for your time and your questions. Much appreciated. I'll let everyone get back to their day. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. That does conclude our conference for today. Thank you for participating. You may now disconnect.